Welcome to Subtle Beast, everybody. I am your host, Foltz, sitting here with my co-host and lifelong friend, Mr. Steve Apostolopoulos. Steve, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
What's up, man? What's up? What's up, everyone? What's going on?
It has been a minute since we have been able to put out a podcast. We had some family vacations going on. We both went on vacation right around the same time. My family and I went down to Myrtle Beach. Steve's family went to Ocean City, Maryland. Steve, how was your trip?
Oh, man, top-notch trip. You know, I thought it was cool that we picked, like, the same week to go on vacation.
Definitely. It worked out. As far as the podcast goes, it couldn't have went any better, I think.
I know. I'd like to take credit for that, but I can't. I think that was some crazy cosmic coincidence.
Divine intervention.
It really was. But the last podcast was fantastic, and it feels like we haven't been in the studio for months.
I know. When we walked in here today, I was like, is there going to be any cobwebs we got to wipe off the wall? But I guess in all actuality, it's only been, what, 2 weeks maybe?
Yeah, and maybe not even two total weeks. It made me giddy to be back here.
Me too, and with what we're going to be talking about tonight, it'll definitely be worth the wait, shall we say.
Hey, let me ask you this. How was the water down there?
The water was nice. I mean, it was warm. The days were extremely hot. I mean, we were with the heat index, we were in the hundreds, 106 the one day.
It did feel like that was what everybody was talking about.
Yeah, it was. We got hit with extreme heat, but you know what? I never complain about the heat. Because if it wants to be hot, it can be hot, because I don't want snow. So,
dude, I mean, it reminded me of perfect beach weather. If you didn't wear your flip-flops in the middle of the day walking across the beach, you're burning your feet in the sand.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were even at the house that we were staying. They had a community pool there that was only for the residents. And take your flip-flops or shoes off, you had to jump right in the pool because the pavement was that hot. But
it was. And there was one day I probably was in the ocean five times.
Right.
And you're first time you go down, you touch your toes on the water, and you're like, ah, it's cold. But as soon as you get in, it's perfect. It was great.
It was. And on my trip, I did something that I've been wanting to do for years, and I never got around to doing it. But down in Myrtle, my son and I, we did the old slingshot.
Those things are so cool.
They are so cool. Even watching them, it's just like, wow. But it goes up like 370 feet, I think, and you're traveling at speeds of 125 miles an hour. What do they say? It was like 5 G's. You feel? I mean, when they release you, yeah. If you haven't done it, it's something you got to experience, because the human body outside of a vessel traveling that fast, I don't think has been done since skydiving. So and you're just being propelled fast.
Just watching it when every time it launches, you look at it and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But the only thing better than watching it is actually being on it. Your video is fantastic. That was a great experience, man. I'm so glad you got to do that.
Me too. And it was crazy because my son went with my nephew, and we watched them blast off into the sky. And I turned to my son and I was like, the next time this slingshot goes up in the air, it's going to be with us on it. So just to build the anticipation. But it was good. We had a good vacation. And
good food, right?
Great food.
I took your advice, and we hit up Higgins.
Very nice.
Got the half bushel, $55.
You can't beat that.
Dude, 3.5 dozen crabs. We cracked crabs and drank beer on the deck for hours. It was great.
Doesn't get into it. That right there is beach vacation. Crabs, a couple brews, sitting on the deck. I love it.
Good company. It was a great trip all around. We hit the water park. Fun was had by all. Even my 2-year-old, the rest of the trip, kept saying, let's go back to the water park.
Yeah.
One more day, Daddy. One more day.
That water park is something else.
It was cool. The tidal pool with the wave pool, that was really cool. He liked that.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah, we had a good time, man. I'm glad your family got a chance to get away and relax together.
Yeah, because it's been a busy summer, but so we got to get together and have some fun and just relax and enjoy ourselves. But we are back now.
Did you get a chance to look up at the stars?
We had a Not really, because when we would go out at night, we would go to a place called Broadway at the beach, and a lot of light pollution. We really couldn't see too many stars, but
we could see the stars better when we got home. We did a cool thing, man. We left Saturday morning. We came back Friday night. So we were like a day shy of a week at the beach.
Right.
But being back on Friday night gave us all day Saturday and all day Sunday to recover. And
love it.
Be at home, you know, go get a nice, we went to the store and got a bunch of stuff. And that's where I really noticed the stars the best. Being up in the farm country, you look up there, there's no light pollution, and it was just amazing. The stars this time of year are so great.
Yeah, and you just look up there at the millions and millions of stars and the vastness of space. And I don't know about you, but I always have to think to myself, what is going on up there? I mean, people go to the Grand Canyon and marvel at, wow, look at this hole. And it's just like, what about up there? What about all that stuff up there?
Turn your head the other way.
Yeah. Be like, you want to see for billions of miles and just wonder what's out there? It's amazing. But I guess, you know, what we're trying to get at a little bit is what we're going to discuss tonight. Now, we've been... this topic has been on our radar for a while, and we've been researching it and just trying to find the best possible information that we could on it. And we have come across some documents that are just stellar documents pointing us in the direction of basically from what I read, it's like it's almost disclosure, but not disclosure. We come across some documents that are marked top secret, and it's basically dealing with the Majestic 12 or MAGIC.
Right, MJ-12. These documents are classified top secret documents that have been leaked and also verified.
Right. These documents were leaked back in 1984. There was a movie producer named Jamie Chanderay, and he was also, as a side project, he was a ufologist. Well, back in 1984, he had a package slip through his little mail slot. In this package, it had all of the correct stamps on it and his name and address, but no return address. But all they could tell that it was sent from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And when he opened it up, inside the envelope, there was just a roll of 35mm film that, when developed, it came out to be an 8-page document in whole. He had each picture, and then he had it. And these documents we're going to be going over in their entirety, and it's really mind blowing. There's a journalist that has been studying the Majestic 12 or MAGIC for the last two decades. If you're familiar with the UFO circles, you may have heard of Linda Moulton Howe, and she has just done a tremendous job with investigating MAGIC and the Majestic 12. I came across some of her research that she does hand in hand with a gentleman named Robert Wood, who he worked on the International Space Station. He's worked on our rockets. He's worked on our different propulsion systems. And so he's an expert in a lot of top secret documents. And he was given these documents to study for a few years. And he came back with his professional opinion. In his professional opinion, these documents are legit.
They're legit, and they look legit. I'm looking at the document, and it's just the nature of the document, the way that it's stamped with top secret, MAGIC eyes only.
Right.
And the way that it actually looks like it's pre- I don't want to say pre-computer, but like it doesn't look like a document from nowadays.
Right, because the way that they used to do a lot of documents like this, and one of the ways that this was verified as far as Robert Wood is concerned as authentic documents was they came across a paragraph within these documents, and one word came that stood out, and it was the word organization. Now, in the word organization, the Z in it was raised just a hair above the rest of the letters, which they thought to themselves when they were first reading it over, well, if this was done at the Pentagon using one of their, it's like a typing press. Like they type press. It in and it presses it into the paper, making an authentic document. Well, Robert Wood, he actually went to the building or the wherever they did these documents. I believe it was at the Pentagon. And he got in contact with a man that actually worked on one of these presses back in 1954. And he showed him the document. And as soon as the guy saw the word organization, he said, I know where this is from. It's from this press in this building. What happened was with the letter Z, it always got dust covered. So whenever that happened and we hit Z, it always was raised a little bit higher. So that's just more confirmation that these documents are legit, because I don't think anyone's going to go through all that to figure out. I'm like, okay. And just remember, the Z is what's going to make this look authentic. And it just had the authentic stamps that they used at that time. As a matter of fact, they're stamped with a seal that they used between 1954 through 1960. Just some really, really compelling documents here, which I think we need to dive in and start covering these.
Right. And, you know, as far as authenticity goes, if you ever watched the show like Pawn Stars, or where they bring in the professionals and
right.
they're like each person in his own trade, like a guitar specialist or somebody that does work on like movie props, and they take a look at it and they're like, well, you know, this is they look at it and they evaluate it, and it's those small things like that letter Z that stands out to them, and they're like, that is exactly how you authenticate something of this nature. So
definitely
I believe that this is an authentic document. It looks authentic. I've been, you know, working with this document since we started our research, and to me it everything matches up with other documents that I've seen. So I would go ahead and say that this is a legitimate document.
I definitely agree. So right off the bat, when you're looking at these documents, right at the top, it's stamped top secret / magic eyes only, national security information. Below that, it's marked top secret again, eyes only, copy 1 of 1. And it starts off by saying briefing document, Operation Majestic 12. Prepared for President-elect Dwight D. Eisenhower. And on there in parentheses, it says eyes only. November 18th, 1952. Warning, this is a top secret eyes only document containing compartmentalized information essential to the national security of the United States. Eyes only access, in all caps, to the material herein is strictly limited to those possessing Majestic 12 clearance level. Reproduction in any form or taking of written or mechanically transcribed notes is strictly forbidden. And then again at the bottom, it's stamped top secret magic eyes only several more times.
So the majestic level of clearance,
the majestic level of clearance, from what we have found by looking through these documents, is the highest level of clearance that you can obtain in the United States government at this time.
So it's pretty much CIA head.
Yeah. CIA, NSA.
President.
Yeah.
President.
Well, maybe, I mean, back then when Eisenhower was in office, definitely. But when Eisenhower was leaving office and he made his speech, He warned the public. He said, "Be careful and be watchful for the military industrial complex." And the reason he did that is because he did have he was read into a lot of these magic or majestic 12 briefings going over classified UFOs, EBEs, alien, whatever you want to say. And then he was cut out of the loop. And that's when he started to get really upset. But let's take a look here at what page 2 of this document states. Again, of course, every page is going to be marked the same. Top secret magic, eyes only. It says, subject, Operation Majestic 12. Preliminary briefing for President-elect Eisenhower, document prepared November 18, 1952. Briefing officer, Admiral Roscoe H. Hillenkoetter, and he went by MJ-1. So he was probably one of the first members recruited into Majestic 12. It states, note, this document has been prepared as preliminary briefing only. It should be regarded as an introductory to full operation briefing intended to follow. And then it goes on to state, Operation Majestic 12 is a top secret research and development intelligence operation responsible directly and only to the President of the United States. Operations of the project are carried out under control of Majestic 12, or Magic 12, group, which was established by a special classified executive order of President Truman on September 24, 1947, upon recommendation by Dr. Vannevar Bush and Secretary James Fortisall. Members of Majestic 12 group were designed as follows. Now I'll read you some of the names that we have. Admiral Roscoe H. Hillenkoetter, Dr. Vannevar Bush, Secretary James V. Fortisall, General Nathan F. Twining, General Hoyt S. Vandenberg, Dr. Detlev Bronk, Dr. Jerome Hunsaker, Minister Sidney W. Sowers, Minister Gordon Gray, Dr. Donald Menzel, General Robert M. Montag, and Dr. Lloyd V. Berkner are just some of the members listed here as Majestic 12. The death of Secretary Fortisall on May 22, 1949, created a vacancy which remained unfilled until August 1, 1950, upon which date General Walter B. Smith was designated as a permanent replacement. Now, let's go back a little bit, because you're probably saying, okay, why are they talking about the death of Secretary Fortisall? Reason being, Secretary Fortisall was probably one of the, at that time, was probably one of the biggest and most powerful men in the military at that time, other than the President of the United States. I mean, he was head of the Navy at that time, and a very credible, very, you know, hardworking man in the military, was highly respected. But what happened was, As they assembled this Majestic 12 and they started investigating some of the UFO quote-unquote crashes or alien sightings or actual bodies from crashes, he was involved in all that. As a matter of fact, he went on trips over to Germany following World War II because there was information that the Nazis had gotten their hands on some alien tech. And he went over to actually look it over, verify it, and try and get as much information as he could so that they could back engineer some of these vehicles. Well, obviously, Secretary Fortisall was a stand-up guy because as some of this information was coming to light to them, as mind-blowing as it must have been, he believed that the people of the United States had a right to know. And he started talking about coming out and letting people know what's going on with the UFO phenomena. Well, that didn't sit well with the other members of Majestic 12 and quite certainly the CIA. They discredited this man to the point where under court order, he was put into some type of a medical facility. And the room that he was in just happened to be on the 16th floor of this facility. Well, one night he decided, according to newspapers and other outlets, that he had leapt out of the 16-story building to his death, committing suicide because he had lost his mind. But over the years, there has been great conspiracy surrounding whether or not he was actually committed suicide, and that actually he had been thrown from the window on the 16th floor. And as far as conspiracies go, the Fortistall when I was a kid was one that was one of the first that I had ever heard of, because me and my dad used to like to talk about UFOs and everything of that, and I can always remember him telling me the story of Secretary Fortistall and him being thrown out of the window. That was his belief, but of course, you know, the official story is that he committed suicide, but you know, anybody that knows anything about this knows that that wasn't true. So,
right. Yeah. That's a classic, you know, hey, they threw him out the window.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's the, and these guys with, like we said, that magic is the highest level security clearance that you can have. So if you have the highest security clearance you can possibly have and you want to exterminate somebody, who's going to stop you? Because you don't follow laws of the land. There is no law for you. So, getting some of that information out there, a little background on MJ-12 and, you know, what can happen if you go against them and things of that nature. Going to move on to the third page of this document. It states, on June 24th, 1947, a civilian pilot flying over the Cascade Mountains in the state of Washington observed 9 flying disc-shaped aircraft traveling in formation at a high rate of speed. Although this was not the first known sighting of such objects, it was the first to gain widespread attention in public media. Hundreds of reports of sightings of similar objects followed. Many of these came from highly credible military and civilian sources. 3 reports resulted in independent efforts by several different elements of the military to ascertain the nature and purpose of these objects in the interest of national defense. A number of witnesses were interviewed, and there were several unsuccessful attempts to utilize aircraft in efforts to pursue reported discs in flight. Public reaction bordered on near hysteria at times.
So was this was Roswell?
Roswell was right around the corner within the next week and a half. Because these civilian pilots seeing these discs took place on June 24th, 1947, and Roswell took place the first week of July, 1947. So
okay.
Close. Now, in spite of these efforts, little of substance was learned about the objects until a local rancher, now here we go, reported that one had crashed in a remote region of New Mexico located approximately 75 miles northwest of Roswell Army Air Force Base. It's now Walker Field. Now, here's where we're going to get into some Roswell. So in this document, it states, on July 7th, 1947, a secret operation was begun to assure recovery of the wreckage of this object for scientific study. During the course of this operation, aerial reconnaissance discovered that 4 small human-like beings had apparently been ejected from the craft at some point before it exploded. These had fallen to Earth about 2 miles east of the wreckage site. All 4 were dead and badly decomposed due to the action by predators and exposure to the elements during the approximately 1 week time period which had elapsed before their discovery. A special scientific team took charge of removing the bodies for study. The wreckage of the craft was also removed to several different locations. Civilian and military witnesses in the area were debriefed, and news reporters were given the effective cover story that the object had been a misguided weather research balloon.
So that is pretty much
right. And what started the whole thing was with MJ-12, you know, there was supposed to be certain steps that everyone was supposed to follow in any type of findings of UFOs or alien bodies, and supposed to go all the way up to the chain of command, all the way to the president. Well, on this particular day, something leaked to the press, because they had printed. I mean, you've probably seen the newspaper, at least a picture of it, where it states that RAAF has found a flying saucer and has it in their custody. And that was the evening news that night. If you can remember back, if you're the age that we are, we used to get a morning paper and an evening paper. But the evening paper that night was that a disc was found. By morning, that had been retracted and stated that it was only a weather balloon, which that's where the conspiracy started. It's like, what are they covering up out there in Roswell? But yeah, I mean, this document itself, it's just so, it's so convincing, and the information in it is just so intriguing. I don't know. Do you want me to go on here and read a little bit more, or did you want to jump in here and take some, or how you want to help out here?
Yes, this document right here, that particular part of the document is that's Roswell. I mean, that's the story of Roswell right there. I didn't know that there was four human-like bodies that were ejected from the craft before it hit the ground. That's part of Roswell that I didn't know about. The fact that they were badly decomposed is kind of unfortunate. It took a while for them to find that, I guess, and they found it through aerial reconnaissance. But I guess they found the disc that night, and then throughout that week, it was probably, you know, crazy action going on around there.
Yeah, well, a local farmer saw it crash from his field, and then he reported it to police, which then obviously the government took over from there. But
and I'm sure that in a place like Roswell, New Mexico, that it's so small that, you know, the beat reporter for the newspaper was just in the area or driving by.
Yeah, they all probably knew each other.
Right, and heard it on the police scanner or something, or, you know, something just minute like that, and got there and got maybe on the scene or around the area, and then put that post out, well, you know, made the story and put it out there, and then having it retracted the way that it did, it's just...
Yeah, it's really bizarre. I watched an interview with the mortician from Roswell. He was the official mortician, and he was called in during this incident to do biopsies of these bodies, and he had no idea what he was walking into. And he said when he first saw these bodies, he was just blown away. He knew immediately that they weren't human. He went on to state that they were about 4 feet tall, large eyes, grayer skin. He said they had looked, their actual look, they appeared to be naked or without clothing. He said, but upon a further examination, they had on some really thin material spacesuit that they used during, probably interstellar or interdimensional travel. He was like, but, you know, once we removed that, we learned a great deal about their anatomy. He states that they did bring in some child caskets to bury these entities. I don't know if they were probably ever buried or if they were stuck in some type of solution for further study. And
I remember hearing a bit of that story from the casket maker, because there, again, small town, and this is a long time ago. There wasn't as many. There wasn't a huge population. And they wanted child size coffins. And they were like, for what? And they were like,
You have no need to know.
Right. So they made them the coffins. And
right. So moving along, let's see what other information we can discover within this document. Goes on to on page 4 to state a covert analytical effort organized by General Twining and Dr. Bush, which I have to wonder if he's related to, you know, the Bush family of the presidents, because, you know, Bush Sr. was a CIA director and then vice president and then president of the United States. I mean,
and it's from that area. I mean, they're Texas oil people, Texas, New Mexico.
Exactly. And if you're one of the elite, you're going to be, if they can trust you, you're going to be in on this act. So it states, Dr. Bush, acting on the direct orders of the president, resulted in preliminary consensus on September 19th, 1947, that the disc was most likely a short-range reconnaissance craft. This conclusion was based for the most part on the craft's size and the apparent lack of any identifiable provisioning. A similar analysis of the four dead occupants was arranged by Dr. Bronk. It was the tentative conclusion of this group on November 30th, 1947, that although these creatures are human-like in appearance, the biological and evolutionary process responsible for their development has apparently been quite different from those observed or postulated in Homo sapiens. Dr. Bronk's team has suggested the term extraterrestrial biological entities, or EBEs, he adopted as the standard term of reference for these creatures until such time as a more definitive designation can be agreed upon.
So they were just, I mean, this is like a preliminary report.
Yeah, I mean, this is their first time that they're just like, wow. I mean, they really don't know what to do. I mean, when this first came across Truman's desk, that a document was sent to him stating, we have recovered a UFO disc and it did have alien entities in it. Sources have come forward and stated when he was first alerted of that, the first thing he thought was, I need to bring in some people that I can trust to, you know, keep this under wraps or to keep it secret until they could find out whether or not these EBEs are hostile. So that's when Majestic 12 was brought in to cover most of this. And funny enough, at the same time Majestic 12 was made, was at the same time the CIA was being created. So, you know, if Magic or Majestic 12 is the highest clearance that you can get, and they have these specific people working on it and just keeping it hush, and it's only for them and the president and trying to keep it away from the human population, I always have to think when I'm looking over documents such as this, you know, what all has taken place within our government? Like, we'll look at maybe like a big event or something, and we'll be told what the reasoning behind it was. But if this is at the top, it one has to beg, did it really have to do with anything extraterrestrial in nature and trying to cover that up? Because there is a lot of information out there about, stated from Eisenhower's great granddaughter. Because when Eisenhower took over for Truman, he needed to be read into these documents and been brought up to speed. And there was a time when a lot of people had speculated that Eisenhower was supposed to go on a certain trip and be at a certain place at a certain time, but the motorcade had taken a turn off of the beaten path, and they had gone to an Air Force base. And the nature of this meeting was Eisenhower was called out there to actually meet some extraterrestrials that, you know, it's the old cliche, take me to your leader. They wanted to talk to Eisenhower. And his great-granddaughter in an interview actually confirmed that that story is accurate, and that he did meet with an extraterrestrial race. There's speculation on what was discussed or even how it was discussed. But I know that there has been Secret Service that have come forward and say, hey, we were there. We weren't in the actual room. But when the president walked in to meet with this extraterrestrial, they had like some plastic covering up, and we could see what was like almost like a childlike person come up, and there was a handshake involved and all that. I mean, could you imagine being the president of the United States at that time, and you're going to handle the biggest discovery in the history of mankind, and to answer the age-old question, are we alone in the universe? And there you are standing, shaking hands with an extraterrestrial entity that has either traveled interstellar or interdimensional and is here now. I mean, where do you start?
Yeah. I don't think that there's much that he could hide at that point. I think that there was, you know, contact that was made, and he was the leader of the free world.
Right.
We'd just come through the war, the late 40s, you know, we won World War II, and if there was contact made, it wouldn't have been made with, you know, obviously Hitler wasn't there for Germany. It wouldn't have been made with Japan. It would have been made with America. That they would have, at the level that it seems that they are at, if they're traveling interstellarly or interdimensionally, they would be able to kind of size up our race and find where the true leadership would lie. So obviously they would want to meet with the President of the United States, and that motorcade veering off and going to the military base is very famous. That absolutely had happened. What happened on once he got to the military base, and I've heard his granddaughter confirm it, but you know, no one really knows what happened behind those closed doors. But for sure, his motorcade veered off, went to the military base, and it wasn't very long. It was like a 20-minute stop.
Right, outside of like Palm Springs or something.
And then back to the airplane, and he was off. But I just find that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, when you leave a meeting of that magnitude, I mean, how do you just carry on as business as usual? I mean, I would have to think that it would consume your every thought. It's like I'd be laying there in bed at night being like, well, what are these guys, what are they talking about with this guy or this alien back at the base? Well, what are we retrieving? What are we getting? But, you know, there is further documents out there, further than the ones that we're covering tonight. But there are some leaked documents that state that not only was contact made, but contact has continued. And
they lay down some ground rules.
Yeah, there was ground rules. They always wanted to know when these entities come into our airspace where we're going to meet. And the documents have stated that the location had to be agreed upon by both parties. So if that's the case, then we were given the technology to be able to communicate with these entities even when they weren't here on the planet Earth. So, I mean, I've heard before by other whistleblowers coming forward that as early as 1950, we were 100 years further on in our technology than we are now with the gifts that were given by these entities. And I don't know. I guess they had, what did they agree? They must have agreed to decide to keep it a secret from our population. I don't really see how that's fair or legal to do so, because as the people, we have the right to know. I mean, granted, it's been stated that if that's the case, it's going to be the collapse of all religion. But I don't see it that way, because why can't religion coexist with these entities? If you're a Christian and you believe that, Jesus died on the cross for your sins and that he's your savior, well, who's to say that he's not theirs too? I mean, they can go hand in hand. I don't see that it would definitely be the collapse. I think that it would definitely propel us further into the future and have a better understanding of the world and our universe. But the collapse of things, I don't necessarily see it that way.
It could have been a decision from the other side as well. The visitors could have said, you know, we've been watching your race and, you know, we're making contact. And we don't know that it's necessarily a good thing for the mass of humanity to know that we're here yet, but we do want to help you guys along, the evolutionary path with some technology. Maybe it wasn't the U.S. government that made that decision.
That's very true, because I have heard from other whistleblowers and through other documents that it did state that the EBEs and the American government were in agreement to keep it a secret until a certain point, and that they were that what they were supposed to do throughout the time until disclosure was to give like subtle hints and lead us in a certain direction, so that when disclosure does come, and not a fake one like Project Bluebeam, actual disclosure, that people would be a little bit more comfortable. I mean, I just think it would be the most amazing. I would be glued to my TV set, I think, constantly. Just be like, wow, look out your window and look at the size of this mothership or something like that. Or I don't know. I mean, it'd be the biggest discovery in mankind that we're not alone in the universe. And if we're not alone and there's entities here, imagine how many other civilizations there are out there. And are some as smart as humankind, or is a smarter than even this race? And how long has this race been in existence? I mean, that they have this technology and just so many questions. I think these guys in MJ12, I mean, are pretty they have the inside scoop to the most incredible knowledge in the universe for us.
Yeah, I think that with great power comes great responsibility. That they're lucky to have the inside track, but at the same time, that level of responsibility is very hard.
It's got to eat away at you, the fact that you can't talk to anybody about.
Which is why we have the document in our hand.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Well, let's get back into this document a little bit. So now it states, since it is virtually certain that these craft do not originate in any country on Earth, considerable speculation has centered around what their point of origin might be and how they get here. Mars was and remains a possibility, although some scientists, most notably Dr. Menzel, considered it more likely that we are dealing with beings from another solar system entirely. Numerous examples of what appear to be form of writing were found in the record wreckage. Efforts to decipher these have remained largely unsuccessful. Equally unsuccessful have been the efforts to determine the method of propulsion or the nature or method of transmission of the power source involved. Research along these lines have been complicated by the complete absence of identifiable wings, propellers, jets, or other conventional methods of propulsion and guidance, as well as total lack of metallic wiring, vacuum tubes, or similar recognizable electronic components. It is assumed that the propulsion unit was completely destroyed by the explosion, which caused the crash. Now, I know Steve and I had seen this documentary where they went in and they tried to describe now what they believe the propulsion system was. And I believe they said that in the center of the craft that there was like a almost like a heat generator that would create enough energy to propel these craft, and that whatever was creating this heat or this propulsion, that there would be leftover components from this type of energy source that they would store then and use at a later time for something else completely different with the craft, which is just amazing. I'd love to know more details.
Right. I think this is so fascinating. First of all, there was a compartment where they had something, and I think like a heat generator is a good way to say it, because we don't know what it was. You could say like a mini nuclear reactor, or that's a poor term because it gets too specific. Like there was some energy source that was kept in a compartment, and through other documents and documentaries, we've seen some drawings of multiple types of ships. But I don't want to talk too much about that because this is kind of its own document right here that we're talking about tonight. But one of the things that Matt always says is you can tell when an alien craft is from man, that's man-made, because it has seams.
Right. You can see the seams. You can see the actual construction of the craft. Right.
But if it's the metallic alien technology, there's no seams. It's all smooth surface, easier to go through the universe with.
Right, because sources have stated that these ETs, they don't assemble craft like we do on an assembly line. It has more to do with self-awareness and consciousness, and using like some side of for the lack of a better term, a 3D printer that we can't even comprehend, is how they process their craft, and not with nuts and bolts and such.
Right, which would explain the lack of any metallic wiring,
right,
or vacuum tubes, because they're not controlling the craft the same way that we would think about controlling the craft. They're using a different level of consciousness than we possess.
Right. And what I like about these documents is, obviously they do date themselves, because if you follow within ufology, you know, it's been stated that in the late 1950s, we had back engineered these craft, and that what they had found out of the propulsion system is that they have able to been they these extraterrestrials for as long as they've had this technology tap into the zero energy point, which is anywhere in the universe. It's all around us, and it's been stated that if you can tap into the zero energy point, that a 1 cubic foot of the zero energy point can run an entire city for a year just on 1 cubic foot, and we have unlimited supply of this zero gravity point. So once we have created that or mastered that, everything's on the table as far as the future is concerned.
As far as energy resources.
Well, sure. Right? Yeah.
So picking up here on page 5 of this document, this top secret magic eyes only document, it says that there is a need for as much additional information as possible about these craft. Their performance characteristics and their purpose led to the undertaking known as U.S. Air Force Project SIGN in December of 1947. In order to preserve security, liaison between SIGN and Majestic 12 was limited to 2 individuals within the Intelligence Division of Air Materiel Command, whose role was to pass along certain types of information through channels. Now, SIGN evolved into Project Grudge in December of 1948. The operation is currently being conducted under the code name Blue Book, with liaison maintained through the Air Force officer who is the head of the project. So we checked out Blue Book a little bit.
We did.
And it seems like it's kind of like a whitewash. Like a
it was a way to put something out to settle the human population as far as whether or not there is whether we're being visited by aliens. And it's basically, it was put out to debunk a lot of things, which
I guess the Blue Book statement was that there was no alien findings, and it came out many years later.
Right. Yeah, and even the gentleman that we were talking about earlier on in here, that the Roscoe Hellencoder, he went by the name of MJ1. He himself actually put out 3 different books, basically debunking the whole existence of extraterrestrials. When obviously a gentleman that knew him and knew him very well knew that he knew all about crashed craft and aliens. So obviously it was put out as a way to debunk. But did you get to read through this the whole page document yet?
Nope. But here on,
go ahead.
On December 6th of 1950, a second object, probably of similar origin, impacted the Earth at a high speed in the El Indio Guerrera area of Texas, the Mexican border, after following a long trajectory through the atmosphere. By the time a search team arrived, what remained of the object had been almost totally incinerated. Such material as could be recovered was transported to the AEC facility in Sandia, New Mexico, for study. Implications for the national security are of continuing importance, in that the motives and ultimate intentions of these visitors remain completely unknown. In addition, a significant upsurge in the surveillance activity of these craft beginning in May and continuing through the autumn of this year has caused considerable concern that new developments may be imminent. It is for these reasons, as well as the obvious international and technological considerations and the ultimate need to avoid a public panic at all costs, that the Majestic 12 group remains of the unanimous opinion that the imposition of the strictest security precautions should continue without interruption into the new administration. At the same time, Contingency Plan MJ-1949-04P/78, Top Secret, Eyes Only, should be held in continued readiness should the need to make a public announcement present itself.
Wow. That just goes into show that This group, Majestic 12, at that time, being led by the President of the United States, they'll stop at nothing to keep this under wraps for, if they want to say, because they're concerned how humans will react to this, that's fine if they want to go off on that tangent. But, I mean, I think we all really know that, you know, behind it all is, at the root of it is money-hungry people that want to either benefit from these technologies and or suppress these technologies so that the 1% of the 1% in America can continue to get their money off of fossil fuels and trees for paper and things of that nature. But what's interesting is what we had found in another document that was leaked 10 years later. Because this document that we're reading from right here was from 1984, but a document that was released in, I believe it was 1994 or 1995, going through more of Majestic and Magic 12, there's some pretty good information in this document that just let me read you what, because it was broken down. It was actually like a little booklet, and it was really cool, and I would really like to get my hands on it so I can read the whole thing in its entirety. But I mean, it's called, they have it listed as Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology Recovery and Disposal. And the chapters just go as far as Operation Majestic 12, Introduction, General, Recovery Operations, Receiving and Handling, Extraterrestrial Biological Entities, Living and Non-Living Organisms, The Guide to UFO Identification, which in that we saw a couple pictures and they had like four or five different craft. When I get to the picture, I'll describe them to you. Just Majestic 12 group personnel and photographs. And the section one is a project purpose and goals. And it's just, I'm getting down to a part that I want to read. I mean, there's a whole page that goes on to the description of the craft. Documented extraterrestrial craft are classified in one of the categories based on general shape as follows: elliptical or disc shape, fuselage or cigar shape, oval or circular shape, and airfoil or triangular shape. And in the document, it breaks it down and gives you a description of each. Then they go in to describe the different entities, EB type 1, EB type 2. Type 1, these entities are humanoid and might be mistaken for human beings of Oriental race if seen from a distance. They are about 5'5", or 5 feet 4 inches in height and weigh about 50 to 100 pounds. EB type 2, these entities are humanoid but differ from type 1 in many respects. They are a bipedal, 3 feet 5 inches to 4 feet 2 inches in height, and weigh about 25 to 50 pounds. Now, granted, they go on to give more descriptions of them, but you know, for time's sake, we'll just move on. There's another page just entitled "The Description of the Extraterrestrial Technology," stating much of the material that they have on their craft having the appearance of aluminum foil and magnesium sheeting, and none of the material tested displayed measurable magnetic characteristics, and it's nothing terrestrial to our planet. Now here's where I wanted to get at. Chapter 3 is it's called Recovery Operations, and it says it's point number 12 in section 1. It's called Press Blackout. And it states, great care must be taken to preserve the security of any location where extraterrestrial technology might be retrievable for scientific study. Extreme measures must be taken to protect and preserve any material craft from discovery, examination, or removal by civilian agencies or individuals of the general public. It is therefore recommended that a total blackout be initiated whenever possible. If this course of action should prove feasible, the following cover stories are suggested for release. The officer in charge will act quickly to select the cover story that fits the situation. It should be remembered when selecting a cover story, the official policy regarding UFO is that they do not exist. Official denial. The most desirable response would be that nothing has occurred by stating that the government has no knowledge of the event. Further investigation by the public press may be forestalled. And it says, next thing you want to do is discredit the witness. If at all possible, witnesses will be held incommunicado until the extent of their knowledge and involvement can be determined. Witnesses will be discouraged from talking about what they have seen. Intimidation may be necessary to ensure their cooperation. If witnesses have already contacted the press, it will be necessary to discredit their stories. This can best be done by the assertion that they have either misinterpreted natural events, are the victims of hysteria or hallucinations, and are the perpetrators of hoaxes. Deceptive statements. It may become necessary to issue false statements to preserve the security of the site. Meteors down, satellites, weather balloons, and military aircraft are all acceptable alternatives, although in the case of a downed military aircraft, statement care should be exercised not to suggest that the aircraft might be experimental or secretive, as this might arouse more curiosity of both the American and foreign press. Statements issued concerning contamination of the area due to toxic spills from trucks or railroad tankers can also serve to keep unauthorized and undesirable personnel away from the area. And it says secure the area. The area must be secured as rapidly as possible to keep unauthorized personnel from infiltrating the site. The officer in charge will set up perimeter and establish command post inside the perimeter. Personnel allowed. MJ-12.
It's, you can't make that up.
No, you really can't. I mean, because if there's going to be a handbook or guidelines to follow, these are it.
I mean, that would train you,
yeah,
to handle the situation.
Sure. And if you know the type of people you're dealing with, if they're going to put this in black and white and you get handed a copy and it says top secret for magic eyes only, and you read this and you don't think to yourself, I wonder if I can tell anybody. I think it's pretty clear that if you're told to tell the press that it's all fake so that they pass the story along.
And then the nuclear waste,
yeah,
that's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it keeps people away. People will be like, "Well, heck, I don't want to deal with that."
I mean, if that was me and I had my family and we rolled up on it, and someone was like, "Ah, there's been a spill," I would turn around and drive away from there as fast as I could.
Yep. Nobody wants to deal with any type of substance that could, kill them upon just breathing it. It's just these documents are so incredible. We came across another one that it's referred to as the scorched document. And what happened was there was a document that was sent to the CIA and Majestic 12, basically stating that JFK, he had involvement in this topic. And he was briefed on some things, but he wanted full disclosure for the United States and for the world.
Codename Lancer.
Yeah. In this document, it refers to the president as Lancer, which during his term, that was the Secret Service name for the president of the United States as Lancer. And it is used in this document, and the document basically states that if Lancer does not get on board with our project, that other arrangements will need to be used or taken care of. And basically it's stating at the end that if no agreement can be made on how to keep this secret, that we need to make it wet, which they had said was used by the Soviets a lot for you're going to be killed and wet, hence blood spill. And these documents were read by MJ-12 and all the necessary eyes, and then a bunch of the documents were thrown into the fire. Somebody grabbed some of the documents, and if you look at them, I mean, you can definitely see that they had started to burn, but not entirely.
There's a hole in one of them, yeah.
Yeah, hole right through it. So you don't know how many documents were actually. Steve had said when we were getting ready for the show, it could have been, a couple hundred pages, and it was just starting to singe through, and somebody was like, I got to grab that. and did, because on this document, the timeline was within, I think it was within 2 to 3 weeks of JFK's assassination.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it was like 10 days before the assassination. Yeah. And it would make sense if somebody threw a pile of papers, like if I'm holding this document right here that we've been looking at tonight, and I throw it onto the fire, the very top page is going to be the last one to burn. So you got a fire underneath it, and it's starting to burn through there, and then the very top page starts to get a hole in it. And maybe at that point, you know, whoever threw the document into the fire had their back turned, and the other person in the room could have just grabbed that very top document off there, which is in most documents the most important one. It's the top page.
Sure.
So they got that one scorched document off of there and were able to get it out of the room. And you know, upon analyzing it, it's an absolutely just mind-blowing document, because it's basically saying you have permission from this source that's larger than the president, this part of the United States that is continuing through administrations from Truman to Eisenhower, Kennedy, and they're saying that, you know, Lancer has been poking his nose into this business, and if you can't stop it, then, you know,
we'll stop it.
Right.
And apparently they did.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of people and a lot of documents are coming together, basically pointing a finger at the assassination of, you know, there's always been a story that, you know, that he wanted to shut down the CIA, and that may be, but from these documents, it goes a lot further to say that, you know, he was poking his nose around where it shouldn't be with UFOs and alien technology. And the same goes for Marilyn Monroe. I mean, there's documents that have been leaked on her, because she was having an affair with JFK and his brother. And when they both cut off communication because they were advised to do so, she was on the phone talking about, you know, if neither of these brothers talk to me, I'm going to be going to the press about information that I have on that they told me, you know, during, you know, cuddle time or whatever, about UFOs and stuff like that. And obviously, if she was with the president of the United States, her phones were tapped within days of her making that statement. She had been found of an overdose. And I mean, and the head investigator, when he first walked in there, he was like, well, there was a bottle of pills. It was spilled over. He said it looked very Hollywood. There was no glass of water in the room. Who takes a pill without that? Who takes numerous pills without a drink? And everything just looked really shady. So it was like I said earlier, what goes on in the United States? And it really is just a trigger or a cover for UFOs and alien interaction with our planet. It's crazy.
The timeline on the documents, it definitely all, you know, lines up very nicely. And it lines up with a lot of the things that we had discussed in previous podcasts, like the beginning of the nuclear programs, atomic bombs, all of these things seem to have occurred around this time of the United States history. And it's one of the most fascinating times for me. I really like talking about this time period.
I do too. And I'm really hoping with in my lifetime that we can see full disclosure, and we can find out just exactly how advanced of a race we can be. I mean, can we heal everything? We can obviously take care of pollution, because we don't need fossil fuels anymore, and we can take care of the hungry, because, you know, Lord knows what type of technology they have to produce crops and food and electricity. It would be probably obsolete. It's mind-blowing, and I know that I'm going to continue my research and do my part.
There's a very slim chance that we are alone. When you look up into the cosmos and you look at all that's out there, and all of those stars, and each one of those being a sun to someone else,
yeah,
it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's arrogant to believe that if in the vastness of space that you know, we're the only life. I mean, there's civilizations that have probably been around millions, if not billions, of years before we were even had arms. So, I mean, it's a really interesting. I think we went through this document in full. The last pages are just some references to some other documents, but really interesting. I mean, if there is a smoking gun, I mean, this would be it right here. I mean, if this isn't disclosure without disclosing anything, I really don't know what is.
Yeah, the document looks official to me, and like I said, we've been working with it here for some time now, and it's definitely that's a cool document to talk about.
Yeah, we finally got ourselves within this topic to where we felt we had enough compelling documentation to go over and basically pull the lid off of you know, what's been going on for the past 70 years right under our noses, and what's been hidden in plain sight, and what are they trying to get us ready for with you know, the movies that are put out and the TV shows and what have you, as either a distraction or a joke. I mean, look what they did with the Men in Black. The Men in Black are a play on Majestic 12 and magic, and they made it out to be, you know, this comical, ha ha ha, look at these aliens, they're silly, they're funny, they're dogs, they're this, they're that. And it's all part of their plan to make it just look ridiculous. And they're doing a great job, but I think as far as we've come in humanity, I can't imagine that there's too many people out there that don't believe that there's got to be some type of life out there.
Well, I would think that
intelligent life.
I think that there would be people, even after disclosure, that still say it could never, you know. But
yeah,
I think there's people that truly believe that there is nothing else out there, that, you know, we are the highest level of evolution that has ever existed in everything that's around. And I think those people,
they would be like reversed conspiracy theorists.
Right.
They'd be like, oh, no, that's all faked. Those are just people with makeup on. Those craft are just, I don't know, projections.
They're going to keep their mind closed. And then there's the other type of person that looks up and says, there's no way we're alone here. And I think those are the folks that are ready to embrace something of this nature and to help move the whole race along.
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, if our government is not going to freely disclose this, I believe it's up to the people to do our research, to do our due diligence, and find out what we can, find what leaked documents we can, put the puzzle pieces together, and, you know, basically have enough knowledge out there to when the government's like, you know, who are we really fooling anymore? Nobody. So that's what we're doing as our part as Subtle Beast. On topics that, you know, we can provide some, what we believe is some hardcore evidence.
Right, and we're going to continue to do it.
We certainly are. So I hope you enjoyed tonight. We certainly did. It was wonderful being back in the studio, getting this information out to all of our wonderful listeners who we thank and love for your support.
We missed you.
Oh, yeah, we definitely missed you, and you know, continue to share this podcast with your family and friends, because these topics are just going to get more interesting, and we need a lot more people weighing in on these topics. So, because we want to hear what your thoughts are. So, as always, we'll have a place out on our Facebook page where you can go out and comment. You guys have been doing a great job as far. We're having a lot of fun interacting with our fans of Subtle Beast, and we look forward to a lot more of that. So, head out there to Facebook and let us know what you think on Magic and Majestic 12.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you all. Until next time, I'm Foltz.
And I'm Steve.
We'll see you next time. Take care of one another. Bye-bye.